I'm Regan Brandt, and this is the Insurance Chatter. What is the insurance industry talking about? What problems are insurtech solving? What trends are agents, brokers, underwriters, and executives thinking about? Every week, I sit down with a different person from across the insurance industry to discuss what's happening in their niche markets. I want to give you a behind-the-scenes look at risk, technology, data, and culture within one of the most exciting business sectors. Follow along to get pumped and see where the insurance industry is headed. Today, I'm sitting down with Rod Fox, Managing Partner and Executive Chairman of Tiger Risk. Rod is the real deal, and he lives with a healthy dose of risk, an unrelenting drive, and a passion to lead a great life, capitalizing on hard-fought victories. He's one of the most competitive people you'll ever meet, and he's got the accolades to prove it. His work has led him all over the world. Before we dive in, I will let him set the stage with his plate song to life.
Eye of the Tiger.
We are soulmates. We are literally soulmates. That is my song,
that.
Too.
I love that. I figured that out.
Yeah. I was like, normally that's my go-to karaoke song, and I'm dropping, doing push-ups, have the mic going. You know, it's legit. There's nothing better than Eye of the Tiger. So I'm
going to love
this.
Only by Rocky, and then we could keep going. But
Exactly. Well, before we dive into the insurance nitty-gritty, give us a little rundown on you.
So I spend a fair amount of time in Connecticut. We have a home in Connecticut, but I'm bouncing all over the place. You know, pre-pandemic, all over the world, traveling a couple hundred days a year. Spent a fair amount of time in New York, 8 kids.
Well, you're a busy guy. Like, are you the gold level, or what's the highest level you can get with?
No, they get the little Porsche for you or something sometimes. I'm very simple. I'll fly in, you know, 34C, but if they're going to upgrade me, I'm all in.
Yeah, you'll take it.
Yeah.
Well, now no one, you know, and not to pin you, you might have gone into this thinking it, but no one normally grows up saying, I'm going to be an insurance agent. So, or, you know, in the insurance industry, how the heck did you get started in the industry?
So I went to a little school in the Northeast called Middlebury College.
Okay.
And I played football and lacrosse there. And okay. I was going to be a football coach. I mean, that was the ticket. So I was on this path. And along the way, as typically happens, I met a guy. My mother was a nurse, and then she became a travel writer. So she would get all these fancy vacations comped. So we were actually in Montana at a dude ranch. And awesome. I was a sophomore in college, really didn't want to be there with my family, brothers, sister, and parents. We're riding horses, and I'm sort of at the back of the pack, and there's this guy riding next to me. We start talking, older guy. And at the end of the trip, he said, hey, you should come work for my company next summer. And I said, well, what do you do? And he said, reinsurance. And I thought, oh, my God, that's horrible. I had no idea what it was. I had no idea what the business was. And then ended up meeting, I grew up in Philadelphia, and meeting two gentlemen that were in the business that said, you know, you'd love this business. And this guy, Ted Blanche, who was the guy on the ranch, is a real maverick. You should talk to him. So I ended up calling him up. I didn't work there, you know, during college, but as I was graduating, I knew I was going to go into football, but I thought I'll just, you know, appease my parents a little bit. So they offered me a job, and I went out for the summer. And along the way, I told the HR lady, by the way, I'm leaving in August to go coach football. And she said, well, we're withdrawing the job offer.
Oh, my God.
And I had to call the boss. And he said, you know, you're a jerk. But anyhow, come back in December. Go do your football thing.
Yeah.
And he had me staying at his, like, little lake cabin during the summer. And I managed to burn that to the ground. Like, fully fire burned to the ground.
No, like a real fire?
Real fire, complete fire, you know.
What? Okay, you have to explain that.
All right, so long story short, when I was in college, I worked in the tree business. So I took trees.
Okay.
There. And so part of his, you know, the package was I got to live at his place, but on the weekends, I was helping him clear land. So we're out there. I'm staying in this one room cabin, you know, that little efficiency had a kitchen in it. And he and I were painting it on a Saturday. There's a bird's nest on a floodlight. I said, you want me to knock that off? He said, no, just leave it. Turns out later that summer, the floodlight's on, catches the bird's nest, catches the roof. I'm in Mound, Minnesota. I realize this fire is sort of out of control. I'm going to sleep and I smell smoke. Call the fire department. Like 15 minutes later, a police car shows up just to see if it's a real fire. And then the volunteer fire guys show up. I mean, the whole thing is just in flames. And they are, I think they came from like their summer barbecue. They had, you know, each guy had a hatchet, you know, in each hand and the oxygen, and they used it as like a training exercise. Whatever the fire didn't get, those firemen chopped to bits.
I mean, you cannot make this up. So you're now, you know, you're the guy out there trimming trees, painting a house, selling reinsurance on the side part-time, and living in basically like what, a Unabomber's cabin by yourself? Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This is how you get started. I love it. He let you stay working with him.
He was in Europe traveling on business, so I had to call him. And the guy I was working for at the company, I walked in the next morning, and I said, we had a little problem. And the guy literally fell over backwards in his chair laughing, as he would. So I had to call Ted Blanche, explain it to him. When he came back, I was actually leaving that day. Like, I was done. He came out to the property to inspect, and he was just, like, so pissed. But he allowed me to stay. We were very good friends. We worked very closely together. And so I went, coached football, worked my tail off, loved it. But I think I made like $1,200. And my wife at the time was working, or girlfriend, you know, at the time was working at a bakery, getting up at 3:30 in the morning. And I had this job in New York, you know, starting in December. So did the football thing, went into reinsurance, and went on from there.
And the rest is history, huh? So how long were you at Blanche for?
I worked there for 15 years. I became president at a young age. I mean, again, Ted and I were very close. So I ran the business for him. And then, I had a tattoo of the logo on my ankle. You know, we had a great run. We took it public. And then he and I just kind of went sideways a little bit. And yeah. I left and started the U.S. operations for a company called Benfield, UK-based reinsurance broker. So built that up. Along the way, one of the core philosophies I've used is we bring Navy SEALs in to help train our people.
Yeah.
Some physical, but mainly mental.
Yeah.
So use the SEALs at Blanche, use them again, starting Benfield. I brought a couple. When I first was building the business, brought a couple of the new senior executives that I'd recruited, and we went out to Indiana for 3 days. So it was five of us and four former SEALs. Wow. And you know, you'd start with a workout in the morning, you'd have a business meeting, you'd work out in the middle of the day, business meeting, and then one day we did a third workout, for which I'm still, you know, 20 years later, not popular for. If you ask those guys about that weekend in Indiana, they will never forget it. So Benfield, and then had a client, the Hanover Insurance Group had a big specialty insurer program company called Clarendon. And they were a huge client of mine, and they were having some real struggles with it. So they asked me to come run it. I'd never run an insurance company. Kind of intriguing, but
yeah.
I said no, and they came back a second time, and I said no, but I was becoming more curious about it. They came back a third time, and they said, will you fly over to Germany and meet with our board? And I'm like, all right, respectfully, I have to do that. So I said, fine. Yeah. And then about 2 weeks before, they said, we assume you're bringing your presentation. And I thought, you're recruiting me. Now you got to, you're having me.
Aren't you selling me on this? What's going on?
Exactly. So I did a little presentation, like, you know, eight things I would do with the company. Went over to Germany.
Yeah.
And they're all nodding like this, like, that's exactly what we want. So we structured it so it was all performance based. I did it. And before That's I awesome. Before I started, I met with a chairman who was a good friend, Willie Zeller, in New York. Okay. And I said, Willie, we have one topic to cover this evening. And so we went to his hotel. We sat down and he said, well, what is it? And I said, I'm a really bad employee. And his face got white, like, oh, my God, what does this mean? And I said, no. I said, I am a great business partner. I'm a bad employee. Like, I will accomplish this mission for you, but you can't treat me like just another employee. We're going to be partners. I'll get it done. We did. I called him about 2 months into the job. They thought it'd be like 5 years. We're going to IPO it, blah, blah, blah. I said, Billy, we're going to sell the company right now. And he fell out of his chair, or the phone dropped or something. We did it. We ended up, I was going to buy it. I was going to use private equity and buy it, but we ended up selling it to QBE. And, you know, so that was done. QBE didn't need me, luckily. Yeah. And while we were waiting to close, I had lunch with an old friend of mine, a guy by the name of Jim Stannard, who had founded Renaissance Re. And just having a casual lunch in my office in New York. And we created a partnership that lasts today. We started Tiger Risk. We bought part of an MGA. Today it's called SageSure. It's called Insight at the time. Yeah. And started a number of other things. So Tiger was sort of born out of that lunch. And now we're 300 people, a couple hundred million of revenue. It's exciting.
Like, you're the real deal, man. You are the eye of the tiger. I love
about
this.
We go hard, but I don't know if I'm the real deal yet.
Obviously, the big elephant in the room is COVID for these last few years. How did that, you know, impact your guys' business?
We were actually in the middle of a large deal in January of 2020. And I remember being on a conference call. It was a Sunday night. And I said to the team, I said, are we concerned about this COVID situation? And there was dead silence. Nobody had contemplated it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we go through. We had a big ski outing in March. 50 people got COVID. And the deal we were talking about at the time went on hold because the world, you know, was crashing.
Everything was on hold. Yeah.
And we paused for a little bit and then we were able to get it done. It was actually an investment from a firm called FlexPoint Ford that was investing in Tiger. We got it done. So craziest thing, right? I mean, just, you know, now 2 years into it, I think the biggest takeaway for me was the resilience industry broadly, Tiger specifically, and the ability to decamp and carry on. And, you know, kudos to the IT people and the tech people and, you know, people, you know, working remote. It was shocking to me. I thought we'd go a couple months and we'd see this, you know, flattening out productivity, everything else. So now it's remarkable. The fact that it's been going for 2 years, still shocking. I kind of ignored it. And I don't mean that disrespectfully at all, but I mean, I traveled not as much as I did previously, but I traveled every week. You know, international travel was difficult, but I was flying around the country and sort of leading from the front a little bit. Like, it's okay to go outside.
Totally.
And, you know, we grew through COVID. I mean, I think we hired 130, 150 people during COVID and brought them in and we'd use opportunities to get together. I'm shocked at the global resilience. One of the things we talked about a lot was staying engaged, because I think during this lockdown and the inability to get together, your world just starts to shrink and you have all these relationships. So we stressed staying engaged heavily and hopefully it worked, but you know.
Well, and you mentioned one of the things I've been talking about, which I don't know how the heck you guys have been able to hire 150 people. That must speak volumes to your guys' culture, because obviously talent is one of those hot buttons right now. What are you guys doing to, like, recruit people?
So I think broadly speaking, you know, one of the messages I give to people, I was a guest lecturer last night for St. John's University, their School of Risk Management.
Yeah.
On a course on leadership. Yeah. I think insurance is a fascinating business to be in right now. There's decades of interesting stuff, whether it's cyber, climate change. You know, people around the world are talking about risk now, and that's what we do for a living. And insurance, reinsurance is really a lubricant to the global economy. Planes don't fly without insurance. Ships don't sail. Office buildings don't get built. You know, you can just keep going. So I think it's a really interesting time. We spend an inordinate amount of time on talent. We recruit special people. I'm sure everybody says that. But I mean, not everybody is going to fit at Tiger. It's a very, you know, high adrenaline, performance-based culture. You know, we talk about something, you know, we want you to be great at life, right? Yeah. We don't want you to just be a good reinsurance person. So, you know, we look for people that they might have been in competitive athletics, you know, at a high level in music, in mathematics, whatever it was or is, we want you to be really good at a skill and have shown, you know, competitive prowess in the world. And then we want you to be great at life. We hired a number of years ago a gentleman who was a headhunter, recruiter. Okay. We brought him in as our head of HR. Yeah. And we call it human capital, which kind of tells you our orientation, right? We're not processing payroll. We're looking for the best talent and trying to make our talent better. So on top of bringing in good people, we bring in coaches for them, you know. So some of them are former Navy SEALs, some of them are former, you know, executives in different industries, and we're going to always try to make you better because you're the weapon system for us, right? It's the people. So to, you know, further your question, we recruit at universities. Initially, we were looking only for graduate students or people that had prior work experience, but now we recruit, I don't know, 15 to 20 undergrads every year globally. So London, Bermuda, US. We've got a little operation in Australia. We've had a business in Hong Kong. But it's great. No, we're having fun.
That's awesome. What is the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear the word insurtech?
I think it's fascinating. I mean, there's all kinds of different reactions to that. Let me back up. I have a pet peeve, which is, I don't think there's anybody in America, I'll say globally, that wakes up on a Saturday morning and says, yes, I get to go buy insurance today, which I take as a huge opportunity. So many of the insurtechs are trying to improve that customer experience. And frankly, some of them are doing a really good job of it. So, you know, I think we're early days. I think technology will be a huge part of our business as we go forward. You know, the other thing I believe is that we're 10 to 15 years behind other financial services industries in terms of technology and you know, the platform. So big opportunity. I think we're early days. There's going to be lots of runway in the future. And you know, one of the examples I was talking with somebody about the other day, if I tell you you can buy phone insurance or you can buy Apple Care, you're going to buy Apple Care every day of the week, right? Totally. So how do we, again, just it's spells opportunity to me. One of the things, one of the other businesses we're involved in is, you know, selling auto insurance embedded in the new or leased vehicle. So it's just part of your overall pricing. So you don't have to do that transaction separately. So I think the future has all sorts of opportunity. And yeah, some insurtechs may not be that great right now, but I think the world will continue to evolve.
So kind of along those lines, where do you think the industry is headed?
It's a great question. I definitely think there will be more direct to consumer. You know, I've got kids who were late 20s, 30s, early 20s. They're buying online. They're not going to a store. And every generation that keeps moving up. So I think that will continue to grow. I thought the agency system might see some trouble, but I think there's still a place for agents. I think there's a place for MGAs. I mean, if you look right now, there's a a flood of new MGAs being created because it's a capital light model. And so underwriters are leaving established insurance companies and they're joining or starting MGAs. So I think it'll all continue to evolve. And, you know, the wholesalers are as strong as ever right now in this market. So it'll be interesting to see. But yes, definitely more direct to consumer as we go.
Now, this one, knowing how competitive you are, let's say you could wake up tomorrow and you could do anything in the insurance industry that you wanted. You had an unlimited balance sheet.
Right this second, I see it in catastrophe insurance, reinsurance. That'd be one, and a close second, maybe tied, would be cyber. So I'd probably be the balance sheet and I'd take risk and then I'd hedge some of the risk. But unlimited balance sheet, I'd take cat risk and cyber risk today.
All right. All right. Everyone heard it here first. Now they can go steal your idea and run with it. So
they're already heading there.
I'm going to take you to the end here. And this is where I like to give everyone a chance to give their kind of 30-second elevator pitch.
You know, back to what I was saying earlier, we love people who are great at life, who want to join a company that is extremely team-oriented. Right. We are all about that is our secret sauce. It's all about the team. So we want people that are ready to learn, take charge and make things happen. So, yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, we're excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, hey, it was an honor to get to talk with you today.
Honor was mine. Thanks, Regan.
That is a wrap for the chatter this week. If you like what you heard here today, join us each week to stay up to date on the insurance trends, best practices, and emerging technologies that are disrupting the insurance industry.